Welcome to Shadows from the Tree, the podcast that invites you to explore the curious world of dark genealogy, uncovering secrets, scandals, crimes, and darker events that shape family trees. Whether you're a seasoned genealogist, just beginning to explore your family history, a history buff, or even a crime junkie, we offer something for everyone. Join us, your host, Danielle and Michelle, in each episode as we share stories from over a century ago for the first time with each other, centered around a common theme. By using newspaper archives as our guide and conducting research using historical records, we piece together these often forgotten stories and gain a deeper understanding of the challenges those involved faced. Our hope is to connect you, our listeners, with your ancestors' past, one story at a time. All right, Michelle, we're back.
We did it.
We made it through some sickness and holidays. Yes. And we are here. We jinxed ourselves because I'm pretty sure that last episode we were saying like we were on a good stretch.
We've been here right on time each time. And then last couple of weeks have been a disaster.
Challenging to say the least. But however, I have enjoyed this theme more than I thought I would have.
Right. Our natural disasters.
Yeah. And I think that looking back at my own experiences, I was kind of like, as I was looking through all different sort of themes about what I wanted to do, I was like looking at avalanches and tornadoes. I even found some really cool articles that I didn't go with that I put on social media. I was really interested by like lightning striking people and like them being cured.
Yeah, that's interesting.
There's like a whole bunch. And I think by posting it on social media, you could also see that a lot of people were commenting about their families being in natural disasters, which is our theme. They were talking about like the Johnstown flood. There was like the great quake of San Francisco, a great fire of Chicago. I mean, I think we hit everything on that thread. There was a lot going on there. But looking back, when I had visited New Zealand, when we were living in Australia, we had just arrived and we had this whole itinerary of where we were going. Mm-hmm. And we had just found out that there was a big road closure and we had to reroute our whole plan because there was a landslide and two travelers in a camper van got wiped and they couldn't find them.
Oh, no.
So I was like, first of all, sad for them. Second of all, freaked out because like you look over when you're driving in the van and it's like it's so scary how far you could easily fall.
Right.
So the whole time I was just hanging on for dear life in the passenger seat, just being like, please, Andrews.
I know you want to look outside, but also it's terrifying.
Oh, it's terrible. Yeah. And then when we were in New Zealand, we visited Mount Cook, which was a beautiful, beautiful place, a lot of hiking.
Mm-hmm.
There were avalanche signs everywhere. And at one point we heard all these cracking noises and then these big pieces, like probably like a head size, like just tumbling down the mountain. And yeah, so
that was crazy.
Luckily, I was never in a big scenario like some of these people in our stories, but you could definitely have a feel for what it could have been.
Yeah.
So
we got too close to.
Yeah, yeah. Even when we visited Hawaii on our way home and just seeing the old volcanic ash,
yeah,
it was just like, wow, like there was a town here and now there's just like, yeah, it's just a weird
buried in the ash.
Strange vibe, yeah.
Yeah, eerie.
Yeah, very eerie. So I'm excited to see what you chose for your story.
All right, I will go first. Great. So I was inspired by, you know, the freezing weather. So we did have some nights and some mornings we woke up and it was like below freezing.
Yep.
And I was like, you know, several years that we've experienced some pretty heavy snowstorms, blizzard-like conditions, you know, the driving where you feel like you're going through a galaxy because it's like the snow is just coming so fast.
Was it, what year? I was not living here, but was it 2014 where there was so much snow they had to put it in the ocean?
2013, yeah. I think it was called Nemo was the name of the
that's
storm.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
and we
right.
had like, we have lived in a condo and had a flat roof and we were worried about the roof collapsing and like we were like shoveling it off with other tenants because it was literally scary. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So that so you did, did cold.
I did cold. The blizzard of 1888. This took place in the Midwest.
Okay.
So we're journeying back, you know, harrowing national disasters in American history. So it swept through the Midwest and it was kind of a sudden storm. So like kids were going to school in the morning and the weather was fine. It was like a normal wintry day. I'll go into more like weather, like degree specifics in a little bit. But, you know, it dropped like 40, 50 degrees, like,
oh my gosh,
within hours. So people were taken by surprise. We'll start there. So we're going to uncover, you know, some human stories, you know, when they faced the fury, and then, you know, there were some frozen victims, but resilient survivors. So we can begin there. So it started on January 12th, 1888, across the plains of Nebraska, the Dakotas, Minnesota, and Iowa. So like I said, the morning was deceptively mild. Children trudged off to school under blue skies. Farmers worked in their fields, and no one suspected what was coming. But by midday, a black wall of clouds barreled across the horizon, and in minutes, the temperature plunged dramatically. Some say as much as 50 degrees below.
Oh, my gosh. That's so crazy. Yeah,
gale force winds and a blinding snowstorm followed. Visibility dropped to near zero, and what became known as the schoolhouse blizzard had arrived.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Yep. Yeah. So it came at the worst time possible, because children were separated from their homes. They were in schoolhouses that offered very little insulation from the cold. So teachers were kind of like faced with the decision, like, do we try to bring them to a different building? Like, are we close enough? We'll be able to stay together. Like,
they and had how to were they getting their news in the moment too? It's not like someone 30 miles was like, oh, you better hurry up and get them out. Like, you just didn't know.
No, it was barely, you know, they had like telegraph lines back then. That's and then crazy. Like, you know, we'll just keep going here. So they offered little insulation. So they kept children inside, or they risked them freezing with the, you know, with it plummeting. So are they brave and hope finding a shelter? So in Plainview, Nebraska, a 19-year-old teacher named Minnie Freeman, she became a hero. She only had a ball of twine, and she led 13 students through the storm to her boarding house, saving lives.
Wow. And they all were holding the twine?
Yeah, they held the twine and walked to like where she was staying. So that, like, I guess the heat was better where she would have been, like, her housing. So she took the kids there. And they all survived
for
the
19
storm.
That's a pretty good problem solve for that age to, right, to be that brave and come up with
let's
that
all tie ourselves together and walk. And she was like leading their way too, you know, so that could have
could have gone any wrong turn.
Yeah, so that was
what was her last name.
It was Minnie.
That's fine if you can't find it.
Freeman.
Okay.
Yep. So on the other hand though, like, there's many schoolhouses that became tombs. So in Holt County, Nebraska, 4 children within the same family died together. So their mother was desperate to find them. So she was also overcome by the storm. So she tried to go and get them. So there's a lot of,
sad,
different stories. So I'm going to read one article that I found. It was literally like an entire front page of a paper in Minnesota. I believe it was St. Paul. Let me just pull it up here.
Whenever you do anything with kids, right, it's just like so much worse.
Yeah.
Because they don't even get a chance to see their future.
Yep. Definitely. So this is the St. Paul Daily Globe. So St. Paul, Minnesota. This was Saturday morning, January 14th, 1888. So I'll just show you the visual. So this whole section is just accounts of the storm. So it's literally like almost the entire front
page.
That's
a lot to read.
Yeah. So we're not going to read the whole thing, but I'll read you the headline. Stung to death. Several persons put to sleep forever by the blizzard's viper tongue. Casualties reported in Dakota, Nebraska, Iowa, and Minnesota. Many missing who are supposed to have succumbed to the storm. The terrible experience of a family of children near Redfield, Dakota. Railroads of the Northeast abandoned all of their trains temporarily. A complete resumption of traffic not expected till next week. So it like
shut
down, halted everything too, because it was like 30-foot snowdrifts in some places, because the wind was just like, it would be clear on one side of the street, they're saying, and then it would be a mountain of snow.
And how do you think they removed snow back then? Like, they didn't have
plows. They had like horse and plow, so it was that kind of a situation. But then the railroad, like, how are they clearing the whole railroad?
They're not.
Yeah, they're not for weeks. That's why they were they were kind of, you know, stuck. So I'm going to kind of stick to two families. So I'll read the first one here. So nearly perished. Terrible experience of 3 youngsters exposed to a Dakota blizzard. So this is the one they were talking about in Redfield, Dakota. This happened on the 13th. Particulars come in this evening of a terrible experience. The result of yesterday's storm, a son of Henry Older, a farmer living about 10 miles northwest of here, started out in the morning with his team and sleigh to take four of his younger brothers and sisters to school. He reached the schoolhouse and his load and had started home when the storm struck him. He went back to the schoolhouse to get the children. The two Olders expressed a desire to remain, but the others started home with the young man. They had not gone far when they lost their way and finally unhitched the team of horses and covered themselves up with robes and lay down in the sleigh. There they remained 26 hours until they were discovered this morning, all three being almost dead. Yep. The other members of the family stayed in the schoolhouse all night and returned home in the morning, giving alarm to the rest of
the family.
Yeah, right.
Where'd they go?
The sufferers were brought to the nearest farmhouse. They were in bad shape, but it is thought they will all survive. One of the horses was found dead, though. Wow. It is thought that often other reports of similar nature will come in from after this storm. The blizzard which raged was the worst ever experienced by the oldest settlers. Tonight, the thermometer is a way down, and the wind is still blowing. So,
that's a long time to make it
26
through.
Hours.
You think about hypothermia.
Can you imagine? They must have been like huddled so close, and that's the only thing that saved them. Because if they were like out, like they said, they just covered themselves, and they could have gotten buried too.
Oh yeah, true. This like snowdrifts,
and the horse didn't make it. Like
that's a story that you would love to hear how that got told over generations.
Right, because they survived, and this family like had so many kids. So this story was definitely passed down. So I'm gonna go to the father's page here on Ancestry. So there was a couple like children that didn't make it to this time period, but from my accounts here, there were at least 10 siblings. So like, you know, some were school age, like they said, some of the older ones stayed behind, and then three of them were together. But yeah, there were a lot of siblings in this farming family,
and they all survived it. Luckily
they survived that,
even though they were all kind of spread out during this storm.
Yep. And they all, like, one of the daughters lived to be 103.
Oh wow.
Yeah So that was like, I was like, oh my gosh, her name was Amanda Ernstein Older. She was born in 1878, so she would have been 10 years old at the time, so she could have been one in the sleigh.
Right.
And she lived until 1982. So I was like, holy crap, she was 103.
That was probably the worst storm she's ever experienced in her entire life.
Yeah. So I thought that was a really interesting story. So I liked how that one was happy.
Successful.
Yeah. I should have started with maybe the negative one first, but then there was Nebraska Horrors, which is like, it's in the same article, but just a little bit lower. So this was from David City, Nebraska, January 13th. So three children of John Denlinger of Garrison, who attempted to go home from school during the storm yesterday, lost their way and remained out all night. When they were found this morning, one was frozen to death and the other two may recover. So there's that family. You can actually, I found the gravestone of the son who actually passed away. His name was Georgie. And I'll just read. It's very sad. It said, little son of J.W. So his dad was John W. Denlinger, and his mother was Rebecca Ella, but it just says Ella Denlinger on his gravestone. So it said, departed this life January 13th, 1888, aged 8 years, 6 months, and 29 days. So it's just a little guy. And on the bottom, they actually etched like a little, I don't know if it's a poem or a saying, but hold on here. It says, our darling, there in the shepherd's bosom, white as the drifted snow, is the little lamb we missed one morn. Torn from the household flock below. So I was like, is that a song? I was looking to see if it was like a psalm or something. But I think it's part of a song that they would sing back in the day, because there's a couple other gravestones I found that have the same thing. But I was just like, oh, it talks about little lamb and the snow.
Oh my gosh, it's heartbreaking.
Very sad.
So heartbreaking. It's kind of really hard when you're reading through these the first time not to just be like same with my story. I was just like, this is terrible. This is really terrible.
Yep. So it keeps, like, you know, you look at the family on Ancestry, and you I don't know. I just connected with that one, with little Georgie.
Yeah.
That made me kind of sad this afternoon.
Yeah.
But, you know, he had siblings, so he had three other siblings that made it pretty long time.
Okay.
And then his mother had passed away in 1891, so a few years after that, and then his father remarried, so there's like three or four half siblings too. So yeah. His dad John had a lot of children, just like the other family did as well.
Now, did they stay in that area? Because for me, like, I know it was a different time.
Mm-hmm.
But if I experienced that much of a tragic loss or you're something like that, there. I'm out of that place. Like, you bring me somewhere where it's like warm, but then you have hurricanes or tornadoes. Yeah. So natural disasters, I guess, are so interesting because now there's more science to make people more aware, but yeah, like, do you just stay in there and then hope for the best, or do you get so nervous and scared that you're...
Yeah, they stayed in the area. Like, he was buried in Iowa, and then his family looks like they stayed in Nebraska. So they were generally in the same vicinity. Yeah. Yep.
Wow.
Yep. I'm going to go talk about the weather. So I was on, like, the nationalweatherservice.gov.
Same.
And they had, like, this is called the Children's Blizzard in the Black Hills Country. So this is the same storm because it's the same date.
Yeah.
So they just, instead of the schoolhouse, they think it's synonymous for Children's Blizzard. So there was, there's a list of, like, how cold it got, and it's like the fifth coldest January on record for this area, and some places like it was like Cliffside was negative 15 degrees. Wow. And like I said, so it was not just it was cold, but it was like fine 1 minute and then
nobody knew,
frozen. Like, people were frozen,
and that's scary because you probably didn't have the right gear on or prepare enough to help yourself.
Yep. So there's also, I found a blog written by a Seamus Dunphy. So he did a really good job of gathering articles regarding this. So we talked about the two frozen. There was one. So an article printed in San Jose Evening News illustrated how quickly the temperature dropped. So the headline was a Nebraska blizzard. When the recent blizzard struck the state of Nebraska, the temperature fell so rapidly that the Creek of Papillion was frozen solid in a few minutes. A calf was in the stream at the time and was stuck fast before it could extricate itself.
Oh my gosh.
The animal was cut out with an axe and thawed out before...
By
a bonfire.
Wow.
At last accounts, it was still doing well. So...
That really shows you how quick it
shows, like,
it
you're
turned.
Just, like, taking a drink of water, and now you're frozen solid in this. I was like, wow, that is very...
drastic.
Very drastic. So another one was Narrow Escapes, D. Smith, D.T., from January 14th. O.E. Stearns was teaching school 6 miles north of D. Smith with his three children were caught in the blizzard. And they were out in the storm 22 hours. The boy had his feet frozen solid to the ankles. He walked a mile in this condition, and his feet, and then when they gave out, he crawled a half a mile to his house.
Gosh.
He'll lose both his feet, but...
but he survived.
He survived it.
Oh, my goodness.
And then there were others.
But to your point, like, you just told the story of, like, that one the two particular families, but how many more stories are there just from this one incident?
Yep. And then there was... they're talking about the winds increased in violence, and it was a very fine snow, began falling thick and fast. So this is a quote from them. I had not gone a mile further when the elements became fairly mad, and I could not see the road 20 feet ahead of the horses. I had gone so far, and the storm was raging with such severity that to think of turning around and go home, thus facing the wind, was utterly nonsensical. It did not take me long to come to the conclusion that the best thing, in fact, and the only thing I could do was to keep the wind at my back and try to not lose sight of the railroad tracks if it was possible to make it back to Aberdeen before night set in. So
yeah, and that's the fear too, right?
Yeah.
Like, they know that if it's only going to drop more at night, so you have a ticking time bomb, really.
Yep. And then I'll just read this like last summation. So when the fast-moving schoolhouse blizzard of 1888 ceased on January 13th, the death toll was 235. So travel in three states, Nebraska, Kansas, and Minnesota, and five territories, South Dakota, North Dakota, Montana, Wyoming, and Idaho, had almost completely ceased. But winter wasn't over. On March 11th, 2 months later, the East Coast, Maryland to Maine, was also paralyzed by the Great Blizzard of 1888, also known as the Great White Hurricane. This storm, one of the most and worst recorded in U.S. history, left more than 400 dead. So that winter was like so devastating, like freezing cold. Like you just think about
from a scientist standpoint, you wonder what was happening, and they didn't have probably the right tools or research at that time to really
like
see
prepare for the storm. Like you know how we're like, oh, hunker down, there's get a blizzard bread and milk. Stay warm, make sure you have all your animals inside, you know. So
and not even that, just like recently with this last bout of cold weather, like don't forget to like drip your faucets or you're gonna end up with some like
so stuff doesn't freeze burst and pipe. Then you think like, oh, they didn't have electricity in those farms back then, so they're just starting fires. So then you think about, oh, did they burn down? And like, they ran out of wood. Like, it's just all the things that we take for granted is just, I don't know.
That's
sometimes I wish I lived back then. And then I think about it long and hard. And I'm like, no, that's not
different.
For me.
It was definitely a different time.
I like heat hard and working. Warmth. And,
Oh, man.
Well, that was.
No, that was a good one. I've actually never really heard of that blizzard, but I mean, it makes sense. A blizzard, we had that, what was it, 78 here?
Yeah,
that I had that really bad blizzard. 70 years people 79. Talk about that all the time.
Yep, my aunts and uncles are talking about it over Christmas. They're like, remember the snow was above the cars, and your dad walked all the way to see your mom. I was like, wow, that's crazy.
I guess it was, but it would be in your living memory if it was that crazy.
Yeah,
so yeah, no, that's an interesting one. Well, I'm glad you went blizzard, because I did end up going tornado.
Right, because you said you were watching Twister.
I was inspired by Twister, but I first, like I said, I was kind of interested in a few other topics, but they kind of just fizzled out. But this one, which is odd enough, will connect to yours in a way, and it really made me empathetic. And when I was reading this, like, I have to tell this family story. So let me just pull up my info here. So this one takes place in 1920, and it's kind of really was hard to imagine that this particular storm completely obliterated the entire town.
Oh, wow.
And it is now technically considered a ghost town.
Oh.
So
they didn't even rebuild it?
No.
Was there no one left to rebuild it?
We'll get there. No. But then it really brought me into like this weird rabbit hole of ghost town. So anyway, so I'll stick to my story. So
that should be our next.
I know, ghost towns.
Because really I have one. Like,
oh, do
saved.
You?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that'll be our next. There we go.
Things organically just coming together. So it definitely completely took out the town. And it was a small rural community of Melva, Missouri. And it took place March 11, 1920, which is weird because you just mentioned March 11th, 1880.
Yeah.
Didn't you?
Yeah.
So it was a place that was once alive with families and dreams of a future, and it now sits as that ghost town, a forgotten chapter in the heart of the Midwest. But the tragedy unfolded on a dark and stormy March day, and is one that, you know, I would think that people who have lived through it will tell through generations. And I'm going to kind of step back in a little bit in time. So Melva in the 1880s and 1890s did have some mining for zinc and lead, but it officially became a town in 1906 when it was a station for the railroad, people who worked on the railroad, and they had a little station there for people to get on and off. So that was completed in that area, and it was named after the baby son of one of the town's promoters. And the town was located 5 miles south of Hollister, if you live there, in Taney County in the Ozarks of Southwest Missouri. And it also was listed on the east banks of Turkey Creek along the Missouri Pacific Railroad. Never been visiting there, so that was a lot of direction. And I have challenged
with directions. Google Maps for that.
Yes, so. But it was a small town. And so when you're going in this ghost town, I'll talk a little bit about it later, but there's still that remains of some of the mines, and you can go on hiking trails and you'll still see some of the remains of foundations of these, some of these buildings and people that we're going to talk about. Mm-hmm. I specifically focused on the Box family, just B-O-X, Box family. And at some point between 1910 and 1920, two brothers, William Pleasant Box and Samuel Lorenza Box, moved their families to Melva to raise them, and they worked as laborers on the railroad. Both brothers were born in Lead Hill, Arkansas, which I believe was pretty close to the border. And they were, their parents were John Pleasant Box and Mary Alice Harris Box. So William was born June 21st, 1882, and he first married Pearly George in 1904 in Missouri, and they had one child, Earl, in 1905. And I did see on records that Pearly did pass away in 1905, so I suspect it was only a few months after childbirth, so I'm assuming that's probably what happened. I couldn't find, like, a death record or anything. And then shortly after, he married Anna Henley. And in 1920, they were on the Melva census listed as William, 36. I really think he was about 38, given his birthday. But Anna, the wife, 34. Merle, 12. Olita, 8. George, 5. Who, and George went by Bud. So I also have, yours was Georgie, mine was George. Yeah. And then I was kind of like, what happened to Earl, like the first child? And I found him on 1910, 1920, 1930 censuses living with William and Samuel's parents. So okay. I'm assuming they raised him for some reason. I would like to know why.
Was there an age gap? Was he like?
Not a ton. So I don't know if maybe this, he didn't want to move him to Melva. I don't really know. So then we had, so that was William. Then Samuel was born April 6, 1887, and he married Florence Morgan in 1907 in Missouri. And by 1920, they had two daughters and one son. And there was, on the census, Samuel, 34, Florence, 33, Hubert, 11, Jesse, 8, Nancy, 5, and John was 1 year and 10 months. And the census is, obviously, the information can be a little off, but it was just, this was 1920. This was literally a couple months before, a month, because I think it was said February, before this all happened. So you're just picturing them, there they are on the census, living their lives. Yep. Someone's going around, you know, before this all happened, they're just...
life as usual. Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they all appeared to, for the school-age children, they all were listed as attending school. And I'm assuming the wives were taking care of the children that were at home, and also house taking care of the home. And it did show that they both were renting their houses. So, not again, like maybe a month later, March 11th, 1920, a tornado comes through. Now, what's interesting about your article was my article specifically stated that the children would have been in school that day, but the teacher, Miss Jean Layton, was unable to cross Turkey Creek to get to the schoolhouse because of the flooded waters from the previous day's storm. So all the children did not go to school. Hmm. And I'm just going to say, the schoolhouse...
is that good or bad?
...was untouched by the tornado.
Oh.
So there's... just keep that in mind. So it was... there was an article from 1968 written by this one woman from, like, the... one of the societies there, the historical societies, and I believe Anna helped with the information. So from there, it said that Anna Box was at home, the kids were home, and she wanted to return a tub to her sister-in-law, Florence. So she went over there with the kids and her to Florence's house, and they invited them to stay and have lunch, mm-hmm. since it was already ready. And then in... also, there was a story about the Mankey boys. There were two. And there was written in that same article saying that they had gone on an errand for their postmaster dad to Florence's house. Something to do with a telephone switch or something like that. So they were about to go have this meal. I believe the kids were out and about playing in the nearby area. And this is how it was written in one of the Taney County Republican on March 11, 1920. had said about noon, townspeople were startled by a rushing, roaring sound. First thought was that it was the water pouring over the dam, but it had been too loud. One look at the sky across the river told the story, and soon the news began to come in. And then it kind of talks a little bit more about how it came up through a few other areas. And there's this really cool map I found where they basically show the timeline and the spots where each people had reported things happening. So it eventually struck Melva and literally wiped the village off the face of the earth, the article said. Mm. Only a part of one home being left standing. And here, 9 were killed and several injured. So, unfortunately, of those 9 that were killed, and it ended up being 11 down the road, were all of the Box children.
All of them?
All of them. Aww. So on that census, we had William's children, and William and Sam's children. And I don't know if I give you their ages, but William's kids were 12, 8, and 5, and Samuel's kids were 11, 8, and 5, and then that 1 year, 10 months. So they all had been somehow, or whenever the tornado came through, pushed or brought down into Turkey Creek, and so it was pretty much a drowning or due to injury.
That's awful.
It's sick, right?
Yeah.
The path was reported of this to be 200 to 400 yards wide in some areas where most destruction was. And I also found a report on one of the weather bureaus that the damage was reported to be $200,000. And it was reported to be an F4 tornado.
Pretty strong. Doesn't it go up to F5, I think?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. So pretty strong. And I think it has to do with, like, the damage or, you know, whatever happens. So, and on the 10th, the weather forecast was supposed to be rain tonight and Thursday, not much change in temperature. That's what was, like, the records of the U.S. Weather Bureau for close by Springfield, Missouri. Mm-hmm. So, you can only imagine, I read some stories about, like, a guy who went, as soon as they heard this was happening, came and, like, took some of the children out of the creek, and those two brothers I was talking about, the Mankey, I should say one brother did survive, the oldest one. He had pretty much seen his brother be taken, and he just couldn't help him. And to make it even worse, both of the moms, Florence and Anna, were carrying children.
Oh, my gosh.
Florence had a stillborn child the next day. Anna did have a child, and that was her only child she ever had after. Like,
she was done.
She was done. And, you know, I love pictures, but honestly, these pictures just made me really sad. Aww. There's, like,
you found a picture of them all?
Not all of them, but, like, here's George. That's William's son, George.
Added color?
Or did you? Someone on Ancestry. This was after. This one, I'll show you that one after. Here's one that George, and then they don't know who the other kids are, but they presume that some of them are the other siblings.
Aww.
I know. It's really terrifying.
Hair reminds me of our
family. Side of the family. Yeah. I know. So all of the children. Oh, here's some more. Hold on. Here's Jesse and Hubert. This was like a little bit earlier, so they're still a little bit young. But I know.
Those babies.
Can you imagine as the parent and the dads, William and Samuel, like, had already gone off to work, like, you know, so they weren't really there.
Did they stay, like, as married couples after that?
I know that, like, I was thinking in tragedy, like,
yeah, either make it or
exactly, yeah. It can tear you apart. So I'll definitely get there as soon as. So it was like a day or two, they started taking the injured and the dead to Branson, Missouri, and that's where all of the children are buried, in Branson City. Let me double check. I want to say it's Branson City Cemetery. But you can see like their headstones all, you know, just have their little names and dates on there.
Yeah.
And there's one other, the death certificates. So I found the death certificates for all of them. It says victim of tornado at Melvin, Missouri. And then it says contribution as secondary was tornado. So that's what like all of their death certificates said. So very, very, very sad. I've been thinking about these poor children a lot. It's very tragic.
You think about like those storm cellars that they have now, and
like the warnings, the sound warnings.
Yeah. Even though like watching that movie, there's not a lot of time.
No,
like there really isn't. If you're on the road in a car, like you're just out running it at that point, or
you just hope for. Yeah, like I said, the width of it, you're like it really could be one street versus another.
Yeah.
Which just makes it so scary. Yeah, so all of those children were buried there. And I talked about Florence's stillborn baby the next day. So, I like I said, Anna and William did not have any other children. But that one child she was carrying during the storm did live until adulthood, and so on. And her name was, let me scroll over here. She was Lena. Married a white, I think it was. And Florence and Samuel, let's get to them. So between 1921 and 1930, they had more children. So they had, let's see here, two girls and two more boys. But their youngest child, James, passed away at 4 months. I know, due to spasms, and it said secondary stomach and bowel trouble. And he died.
Did they have enough?
Like, I know.
Enough like, trauma? Like,
that's a lot.
Oh, my gosh.
So he had died on January 1st, 1951. So that was their last child. And that was Point Lookout, Missouri. So they both stayed. Sometimes I saw them maybe just over the border in Arkansas. And then, but they lived in Missouri after. So, again, they didn't really leave that tiny county. And Florence lived to the age of 63, and he was buried in Blue Eye, Missouri. And another just interesting fact was that two of the other daughters that they had after, they married brothers, both Booth, it was B-O-O-T-H. And in one of the daughters' obituary, she did say she was preceded in death by all her siblings, including the ones that she wasn't even born. So they had to talk about it.
Yeah. Kept memories alive.
Yeah. And then William, let's see, he died November 21st, 1959. So not too much later in Taney, Missouri. Oh, I'm saying that right, Taney. At the age of 77, and he was buried in Branson, Missouri. So I wanted to find out, like, did he want to be near his children?
Yeah.
You know? So sad. And there was even a picture on Ancestry, I'll pull it up, of William Box at the site of their house in Melva 37 years after the storm.
Oh, wow.
So he was visiting.
He would go back? I don't know if I would go back.
Yeah, no, that's got to be...
Yeah.
That's got to be some PTSD, like,
right?
Seriously.
Or every time you hear, like, it does sound like a loud.
Yeah.
Like, they say that's, I mean, I've never experienced that, but.
No.
They say the clouds, like, the sky turns, like, green sometimes, and then you hear, it sounds like a train, I've heard
people say. They were saying it was so loud, they thought it was going to be the dam breaking, but, you know.
And if they live in that area, they're probably going to experience that. Yeah. Again, like, oh my gosh.
I know, right. And then it's like, how do you even prepare for that? And just, it's a lot. But yeah, so a few residents did continue to live in the nearby area, but then it just fizzled and never, the people who lived there and lost their house never rebuilt, and they just. Right.
Probably weren't enough resources or like community in the area anymore.
But you can see, I'll show you another picture after, but there's some pictures of some of the damage of the tornado right there. Wow.
Just wiped it.
Wiped it, like, completely flat.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there were a couple instances of other people who were, like, at either the beginning of the tornado or later on at the end of its path who either succumbed to their injuries or were killed. So I think it was 11 total And then all the children.
Yeah.
So let's see here. Getting into a little bit of like the ghost town, I guess. So if you go there, some of the remains are still there, like the foundation, some of the mines. And then the most, I guess, well-known spot is of the Presbyterian missionary Lucy Woods. So Miss Woods and her neighbor Miss Buell sought safety in the large stone fireplace area, and so that is still standing.
It is.
So you can, yeah, so you can see a picture of when the tornado happened, and then if you like were to go there, what's like left of it.
It's still,
yeah, it's like literally just the found outside perimeter and then just the standing fireplace.
Wow.
So you can imagine like being just hugging that thing. Yeah, getting in there.
Yeah, that was a smart idea because you would have been whipped right out.
Yeah. I also heard a couple of stories. I didn't really look into it fully about how some of the townspeople like blamed the school teacher. Like had she been, like I mentioned, had she been able to cross the creek, would they have been at school? And it's one of those things, like, I guess, yeah, you want to be able to blame someone because you're just in such bad state, but it's nobody's fault.
Nature, like,
yeah, nobody's fault.
No one creates tornadoes.
Exactly. But yeah, so, like, I just think if there's something to, like, remember about disasters like this tornado, it's just, they don't just destroy the buildings and that stuff. It, like, erases lives, and hopefully families continue to tell the story of these families. And I did connect with someone on Ancestry, like I do.
Yep.
And she was the granddaughter of Florence and Samuel Rands Box. So her mother was one of the children born after the storm in Melva. And the woman says her and her sister try to go put flowers on the graves every year.
Aww.
Which is nice. So definitely keeping those people in their memory, but very, very tragic. So there was a lot of pictures. They did a good job. There was even this one, it says of the boarding cars on Melva. I don't know if this was like after the storm hit and they were trying to get like eventually leaving, but they're supposed to be like Samuel there and Anna there, and yeah, these are just like more pictures of the family. And yeah, so Ancestry, specifically the one person I spoke with, did a really good job at putting these records on here to keep them for future generations. And yeah, I'm glad for the story to be done because it's definitely taken a lot of room in my heart.
Yeah.
So
yeah, but you keep, you know, keeping their memories alive too.
The oral history.
More people will learn about it, so they're not forgotten, which is why we do this, I think.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Bringing pieces of history and understanding, you know, what their lives were like and not forgetting.
Right. And how specifically that family, some of them were able to move on. And, you know, I can only imagine, though, that more emotional toll and those stories, more personal stories that they would have told to their family.
Yeah. Resilience.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Exactly. So, yeah. So that's a wrap. I did have one trivia question for you.
Oh no.
I was just curious while researching. In what year did the U.S. National Hurricane Center begin officially naming hurricanes?
I don't know. Was it in the 40s or something?
50s. You were close.
Oh. So close.
I was just curious because, you know, now there's like a system, they have names, they can alert people more for things like that. So, so if you're interested, I did definitely post a few more family stories on the social media of just other events that took place. And I liked this one because I feel like it can touch upon a lot of different people and it's relatable to many people. And for those people who live in states where you have to battle these things, it's a lot of courage because you just got to be prepared.
Definitely. Yeah, so if you have family stories like this of either the blizzard of 188 or the tornado in Melva, then, you know, email us.
Yeah, reach out. We'd love to hear it.
Yep, definitely.
Well, thanks for listening. Yeah, and remember, it's not a matter of if you will find a shadow in your family tree, but when, because behind every family tree, there are shadows.
Thanks for joining.